When Smoke reached the canyon floor, he stayed in shadows away from the campfire until most of the other bandits had finished their meal, grabbed their women, and retired to the other cabins with their sleeping bags. He eased up to the pot of meat and beans and piled some on a tin plate, poured himself a cup of coffee, and walked off to the side, as near to Slaughter's cabin as he could get, still not arouse suspicion. He sat on the ground with his back to a fir tree and ate and drank his coffee, trying to keep his muscles from stiffening up while he waited for his chance to make a move. A drunken cowboy with one arm around a thick-set woman and a whiskey bottle in the other hand walked by.
Howdy, Curly.
Mm-hmm.
Cold enough for you?
After the pair passed, Smoke glanced up and saw the door to Slaughter's cabin open. A tall woman walked out and, followed by a man, proceeded toward the outhouse behind the cabin. Smoke set his plate and cup on the ground and got to his feet, making his way around behind the outhouse. The man was leaning away from the wind, trying to light a cigarette when Smoke approached him.
Got a light? Sure, Curly.
The man held out the match. When the light hit Smoke's face, the man's eyes widened.
Say, you ain't Curly.
Smoke threw his arms around him and held him up as he died, then eased the body to the ground and pulled it behind the outhouse where it wouldn't be easily seen. After a moment, the door opened and Mary stepped out, arranging her long dress. Smoke stepped up to her.
Shh, Mary, Smoke.
Oh.
Come on, we gotta make tracks before they miss you.
Mary nodded and followed him as he moved back into the deep shadows near the wall of the canyon. He took her arm and walked as rapidly as he could toward a small footpath he'd seen near the outhouse. It wasn't much more than a clear area running up the slope between fir and pine trees, and was so steep at times that he almost had to carry her up the wall. They had made it almost 100 yards up the canyon wall before the door to the cabin opened, and a large, broad-shouldered man appeared. He had a cigar in his mouth and stood on the small porch of the cabin for a moment, looking back toward the outhouse. He must have sensed something was wrong when he didn't see the guard he'd sent with Mary, for he suddenly drew his pistol and ran toward the privy.
Jack! Where are you, Jack?
Smoke and Mary stopped and watched as he suddenly stiffened when he found Jack's body crumpled on the dirt behind the small structure. He jerked the outhouse door open, then turned around and held his pistol in the air. Suddenly, the night lit up with explosions of gunfire from all sides of the canyon walls. The first to fall were the sentries guarding the mountain passes into and out of the canyon. Without waiting to see what happened next, Smoke took Mary's arm and propelled her up the slope as fast as he could. Bandits rushed out of cabins and sleeping bags like ants from a disturbed mound. They ran into the center of the camp, pointed their pistols and rifles at the walls surrounding them, and fired blindly, shooting at the knife as if they could somehow stop the death raining down on them. A stick of dynamite landed square in the center of the main campfire. Two of the smaller cabins caught fire.
God damn it, get under cover!
Finally, evidently figuring his pistol hadn't the range to reach their attackers, Slaughter ducked back into his cabin and reappeared moments later with a rifle, accompanied by Whitey and Swede, who also had long guns in their arms. Meanwhile, men outlined by the light of the burning cabins and the other fires started by dynamite were being cut down where they stood. Bodies littered the canyon floor. Before long, the outlaws learned to stay hidden, crawling behind fir and pine trees on their bellies, crouching next to dead bodies. And some even made their way to the corral, trying to hide among their mounts to escape the withering fire from above. Smoke and Mary eventually made it to the cliff tops overlooking the valley below. She stepped up behind Monty, who was crouched behind a boulder, pouring shot after shot into the men below.
Monty!
Mary!
Oh!
Monty dropped his rifle and rose to throw his arms around her, his eyes finding Smoke and glistening in gratitude.
We don't have a lot of time for a reunion. We won't be able to keep them pinned down for much longer. So I want you and Mary to get on your horses and get the hill away from here. Find Muskrat and have him lead you down the mountain the fast way. Get to Jackson Hole and take the first train out of town.
What if it's not heading for Colorado?
I don't care where it's going, just get out of here.
Well, what about you and the others?
Slaughter doesn't know who attacked him and his gang. We'll give it another hour or two, then head back to Jackson Hole. We'll get back in the rooming house and act as if we don't know anything about the attack. After a few days, we'll make our way back to Big Rock.
What do you think Slaughter's gonna do?
If he's smart, he'll cut his losses and figure this was a bad idea.
And if he's not?
Then he'll come looking for us at Big Rock. And we'll be ready for him.
Monty helped Mary up into the saddle, then swung up on his own mount. Smoke pointed off to the left.
Muskrat's over there. Find him and get moving.
Monty leaned down and stuck out his hand.
Thanks, Smoke.
Don't mention it, partner. Just get Mary back to Big Rock. My advice is to take her to the Sugarloaf until Sally will be back in a week or two.
Monty nodded and spurred his horse toward where Muskrat's big sharps could be heard sending 50 caliber slugs toward the outlaws' camp. Smoke picked up his sharps, veered back the hammer, and leaned over a boulder, searching for someone else to kill. Close to midnight, Smoke and his friends fired their final shots at the outlaw camp and jumped on their horses to ride back to Jackson Hole. They left behind them a camp in ruins, with most of the cabins destroyed or severely damaged, the corral torn asunder, and the horses scattered and running wild. At least 10 men lay dead, and many more were wounded. As they rode back down the mountain, Smoke watched carefully for the landmarks Muskrat had pointed out to him. Lewis pulled his bronc up next to Joker.
You think there's any chance we killed Slaughter and put an end to this entire sorry episode?
In all my years out here, Lewis, I've trailed lots of men and had some on my trail. And I've never had a problem solved that easily. I think we'd better figure on Slaughter surviving our assault.
What do you think he's gonna do?
Well, first off, it's going to take him a while to sort out the mess we left back there, at least a day or so. Then he's going to get to thinking that the only place an attack like that could come from would be Jackson Hole. I think he's going to come to town loaded for bear, looking for anyone who's new to town or doesn't fit in. He'll want revenge, and I don't think he'll be particularly selective on who he takes his anger out on.
Perhaps we should pack our gear and get on the trail toward home before he comes looking.
We can't. Got to stay here long enough to give Monty and Mary time to get away clean. If we can stall him a few days, there won't be any way he can catch up to them before they manage to get back to Big Rock.
And if he and his gang comes to Big Rock looking to get even?
I'm going to send Sally a wire tomorrow morning. Monty and Mary have lots of friends back home. I'll tell her to organize the town and to be ready. We may be in for a monumental fight once he rebuilds his gang.
Do you really think he'll go to all that trouble for a mere $50,000?
It's gone way beyond the money, Lewis. Slaughter's been dealt a severe defeat, and in his own backyard. It's his reputation he's going to be concerned with now. If word gets around that some country sheriff took Big Jim Slaughter on and kicked his ass, Slaughter won't be able to move without looking back over his shoulder all the time to see if someone else thinks they can do the same.
Just as they came down off the mountain slope and pulled onto the main trail headed toward Jackson Hole, a light snowfall began. Smoke and the others pulled their coats tight around them, settled their hats low to keep the snow out of their eyes, and spurred their mounts toward town. For the next 2 days, Smoke and Lewis and Cal and Pearly were careful to take their meals apart and to not be seen talking to each other. Lewis continued to frequent the gaming halls, giving expensive lessons to the cowboys about the dangers of playing poker with an expert. Smoke spent most of his time in various saloons, hanging around and listening to idle talk. Cal and Pearly made it a point to let everyone think they were miners, working a claim in the nearby mountains. So if Mr. Schultz told anyone they'd bought some dynamite and gunpowder, there wouldn't be any suspicions raised. Sheriff Walter Pike walked up and stood next to Smoke at the Cattleman's Saloon Bar.
Howdy, Mr. West.
Hello, Sheriff Pike.
Well, I've gone through all of my circulars and can't seem to find any recent paper on you, Johnny.
I told you, Sheriff. I'm just a law-abiding citizen hanging around until I can find some work.
Uh-huh. Sure you are.
What's that supposed to mean, Sheriff?
I've seen a lot of men come through here, West, and I've gotten to be a pretty good judge of character. You don't fit in with the rest of the pond scum in this town.
Oh?
No. Oh, I can see you're handy with a gun, that's evident. But you don't go around trying to impress everyone with how mean and tough you are. Even though it's plain, you could take just about anyone else in town with those six killers on your hips.
Sheriff, I make my living with these pistols. I'm not one to use them unless there's a profit in it for me. That's all.
I'm not so sure that's all, Johnny. You don't fit in, so I'm gonna be watching you to see just what your game is. All right?
Sure, Sheriff. It's your town. You can do anything you want.
See you around, Johnny.
Be seeing you, Sheriff.
The next day, Smoke was having lunch in Aunt B's dining room when he glanced out of the window and saw a group of four men talking to Sheriff Pike on the boardwalk in front of the Cattleman's Saloon. After a moment of conversation, the sheriff inclined his head toward Aunt B's boarding house and said a few more words. The four men looked over, nodded, and began to cross the street toward B's place.
Here we go.
Across the room, Lewis was at a table by himself, and Cal and Pearlie were sharing another table. Smoke caught their eyes and nodded slightly, cutting his eyes toward the dining room door. His friends nodded back, and he could see each of them reach down and take the hammer thongs off their pistols. Lewis leaned back and straightened his right leg, allowing him easy access to his pistol. Smoke pushed his plate away and concentrated on his coffee cup when the four men entered the room. A large, broad-shouldered man was the leader, and behind him was a tall, heavy-set blonde man, a thin, wiry albino, and a young kid in his teens wearing a black vest and twin pearl-handled Colts on his hips. After standing in the doorway for a moment, surveying the customers, the tall man noticed Smoke and began to walk toward him, his friends fanning out behind him.
Howdy, mister. Would you be Johnny West?
Maybe. Who wants to know?
I'm Big Jim Slaughter.
So?
The young kid's hand moved next to the butt of his pistol, and his face clouded with anger.
So, watch your mouth, cowboy.
I ain't no cowboy, sonny boy. And if your hand twitches again, I'll kill you where you stand.
Oh, hold on, Mr. West. There isn't any need for hostilities. May we join you?
It's a free country.
I heard you were asking around about me last week.
That's right. I was asking about a lot of people, trying to see if anyone was hiring guns.
And were they?
Nope. For a supposedly wide-open town, it's been quiet as a church around here.
Well, I thought maybe someone had hired you to do a little job out at the hole in the wall the other night.
Oh?
Yeah. My men and I were attacked out there night before last.
Well, then, it couldn't have been me done the job. Because if I'd been hired out to attack you, Slaughter, you'd all be dead now. Not sitting here asking me fool questions.
Why, you...
In the wink of an eye, Smoke's pistol was in his hand, and he slapped the barrel backhanded across the kid's face, knocking him backward out of his chair.
Goddamn! I never even saw him draw!
As the kid shook his head and started to get up, Smoke eared back the hammer and pointed the barrel at the kid's face.
You sure you want some more of this, sonny boy?
Kid, get up and wait for us over at the Cattleman's.
But Mr. Slaughter...
I said go!
Yes, sir.
I thought the Durango Kid was supposed to be fast.
Evidently not fast enough. The kid ought to change professions before he gets killed trying to be something he's not.
You interest me, Mr. West. I might have a place for you in my organization.
I don't come cheap.
I bet you don't. Would you be willing to travel?
Depends. How far? And what's the pay?
Me and my man are going to take a little trip over to Colorado in a few days. The pay's $100 a month against the cut of what we make when we get there.
$100 a month, huh? That's what you're paying these men?
Yep.
Then I'm going to cost you $100 and a half.
What?
And you're lucky I don't ask for $200, since I'm at least twice as good as what you got working for you now.
All right, Mr. West. If we decide to use you, you'll get $150 a month.
Sounds fair.
Good. I'll let you know in a day or so.
You know where to find me.
That I do, Mr. Will.
After Smoke left the room, Whitey glanced at the door to make sure he was gone, and then turned back to Slaughter.
What do you think, boss?
I don't know yet. Mr. West could have been one.
Certainly good enough with a six-shooter.
Why didn't you let the kid take him on, Jim?
We lost half our men the other night, Swede. And the other third are so scared they ain't gonna be worth spit. Wes would have killed the kid as easily as swatting a fly.
You think he's that good?
Did you see him draw? He has the fastest hands I've ever seen. He could snatch a double eagle off a snake's head and give him change before he could strike.
Yeah, he don't look all that bad to me.
You weren't looking at the same man I was.
As they ate, the three men looked around at the other customers in the dining room.
See any of the likely suspects?
Slaughter nodded.
Those two over there in the corner impressed me as being right sure of themselves.
Swede glanced over his shoulder at the table containing Cal and Pearly.
You mean those two boys?
They're not exactly boys, Swede. Oh, I'll grant you, they're young. But look at their eyes. They've seen plenty of action. And the way they wear their guns shows they ain't no pilgrims.
You want I should go brace them?
No. Let's finish our food and we'll see what happens.
Cal could see Slaughter and his men watching him out of the corner of his eyes.
Pearly, I think they're talking about us.
Pearly paused a moment from shoveling pancakes into his mouth to glance up at Cal.
I don't doubt it, Cal. I figure they're going to be looking at most everybody in town for the next day or so, just like Smoke said. They got to know the men who blasted them came from here, so it's only natural to try and figure out who it was.
What are we going to do if they come over here asking us a lot of questions?
Just act like Smoke told us. We're miners, pure and simple. Don't want to have no truck with gunfighters and such.
Sure enough, when Slaughter and his men finished their breakfast, they got up from their table and ambled over to stand in front of Cal and Pearly. Slaughter stood there looking down until the two men glanced up at him.
Howdy, boys.
Pearly nodded, his mouth bulging with eggs and pancakes. Cal just looked and didn't answer.
I was wondering if you men are interested in hiring on with me and my men.
Doing what?
Using those six killers on your hip.
See, Cal, the man thinks we're gun hawks.
Pearly glanced back up at Slaughter and the two hard men standing with him.
Thanks for the offer, mister, but my brother and me is miners. We don't hire our guns out.
Miners, huh? Doing any good?
Some days are better than others. Why?
Oh, no reason. Just wondering.
Well, we're making enough to keep us in beans and bacon, and that's all anybody needs to know.
You two must be the pair that bought some dynamite from Schultz's store the other day.
You've been asking around about us?
Well, let's just say we're interested in anybody who bought dynamite.
Yeah, we bought some. You ever try to dig through 20 feet of granite, mister?
Schultz said these two men also bought a lot of cartridges at the same time.
A lot of men try to take other people's gold instead of digging it out themselves. You got any more fool questions?
Whitey stepped forward, his hand near his pistol.
I'd watch your mouth, miner man, before somebody shuts it for you.
Pearly scooted his chair back and let his hand rest on his thigh next to his holster.
You're welcome to try, mister, anytime you think you're ready.
Pretty tough for a miner.
I've mined in Tombstone, Deadwood, and lots of other places filled with men who think they were fast with a gun. I ain't particularly fast, but I generally hit what I aim at, and I'm still alive. So call your dog off, mister, or somebody's gonna get a gut full of lead.
Slaughter grinned, shaking his head at Whitey.
You sure you don't want a job? I could use some men who ain't afraid to use their guns.
No, I told you, we're mining right now. But you might ask again after the snow fills the passes up. If we don't dig out enough to get us through the winter, we might just take you up on your offer.
I'm afraid that'll be too late. Good luck to you in your hunt for gold.
Jiminy, I thought for a minute there that albino was gonna draw on you, Pearly.
So did I. He's lucky he didn't, or he'd be headed for Boot Hill by now.
Pearly rotated his head to loosen neck muscles made tight by the confrontation. Then he looked around the room.
Now, where is Aunt Bee? I'm ready for some pancakes and coffee.
After Smoke left Aunt Bee's dining room, he ambled over to the cattleman's saloon. He figured Slaughter and his men would show up there sooner or later, and he wanted to know what they had planned. He knew Slaughter was short of men, and the cattleman's was the logical place for him to go and try to hire new men for his mission of revenge. When he entered the Bat Wings, he stood for a moment to let his eyes adjust to the gloom. He let his gaze roam the room, and it didn't take him long to see the Durango Kid sitting at a table with some other men, probably also on the payroll of Big Jim Slaughter. The kid had evidently stopped off at the doc's office, since he had a piece of white plaster stuck to his cheek where Smoke had slashed it with his pistol. Most of the blood had been cleaned off his vest and shirt, too. When Smoke walked to the bar, the kid stopped whatever he was saying and stared at Smoke with hard eyes, as if he might scare him with the ferocity of his look. Smoke grinned and nonchalantly tipped his hat at the kid as he sidled up to the bar. He stood so he could see all the men in the room, not wanting to present his back to anyone who might want to put a bullet in it.
What'll you have?
Shot of whiskey with beer chaser.
Smoke rarely drank whiskey, and never this early in the day. But he had an image to project, and he had to stay in character. As Smoke downed the whiskey and followed it with a drink of beer, the kid leaned over and said something in a low voice to the men at the table with him, causing them to stare at Smoke with hate-filled eyes. He could see the kid's face getting redder by the minute, and he knew it wouldn't be long before the young man who fancied himself a gun hawk would try his hand. There was just no way he could allow Smoke to pistol whip him and keep his self-image as a gun slick intact. Jim Slaughter and the albino and Swede chose that moment to walk through the bat wings, striding to the center of the room as if they owned the place. Slaughter nodded at Smoke, then turned to face the many tables where men were sitting and drinking their breakfast. He held up his hands for attention.
Gentlemen, my name is Jim Slaughter, and I'm hiring men who ain't afraid of using their guns. If anybody's interested, come see me at my table, and I'll tell you what the job is and what it pays.
When he finished speaking, Jim walked over to a table in the corner where two men were sitting. He stood there, looking down at him for a moment until they hurriedly got to their feet and went to another table across the room. Slaughter and Whitey and Swede took their seats, and Slaughter motioned for the bartender to bring him a bottle of whiskey and some glasses. While he was filling the glasses, the kid got to his feet and hurried over to his boss's table. Smoke couldn't hear their conversation, but he could tell it did not go the way the kid would have liked it. The boy hung his head in shame and crawled back to a seat at the table across the room. In the next 15 minutes, over 20 cowboys approached Slaughter's table to ask about the job he was offering. Smoke had no way of knowing how many took the outlaw up on his offer, but he supposed with the wages Slaughter was willing to pay, quite a few of them did. He briefly wondered where Slaughter was getting that kind of money, because the $50,000 he expected to get from Monty wouldn't go far to split among 20 or 30 men. After the last of the men in the saloon had finished talking with Slaughter, he got to his feet and began to walk towards Smoke, a half grin on his face. Over his shoulder, Smoke saw the Durango kid get to his feet, his face a mask of hate and humiliation. When Slaughter was no more than 10 feet from Smoke, the kid made his move, crouching and going for his pistol. As he aimed it at the back of Slaughter's head, Smoke drew in one lightning-fast motion.
What the hell?
Slaughter whirled and ducked, reaching for his own pistol.
Son of a bitch!
Slaughter came out of his crouch, pointing his gun towards Smoke.
Boss, no! He wasn't shooting at you.
Slaughter and Smoke stood there for a moment, pistols pointed at each other, until Smoke's lips curled in a grin.
You want to make it too, Slaughter?
Slaughter glanced back over his shoulder at the body laying limply on the floor.
What happened?
Evidently, the kid didn't take too kindly to you dressing him down in front of the other men. Looked to me like he was trying to plug you in the back.
Whitey and Swede rushed up to stand next to Slaughter.
He's right, boss. The kid already had his pistol out and was aiming at the back of your head.
Slaughter relaxed and holstered his Colt.
And why didn't you do something about it? Isn't covering my back what I pay you for?
Whitey ducked his head, his eyes unable to meet Slaughter's.
It all happened so fast, Jim. How'd we know the kid was gonna do something crazy like that?
You mean the kid had his gun out and pointed at me? And West was able to draw and fire before he could pull the trigger?
That's right, boss. I ain't never seen nothing like it. One second, the kid was set to shoot you in the back, and the next, West's gun was in his hand, blowing the kid to hell and back.
Slaughter walked up and stuck out his hand.
I guess I owe you my thanks, West.
Smoke took his hand.
Don't take it personal, Slaughter. I couldn't care less if one of your men shoots you. It's just that I can't abide a back shooter.
Well, that's still one I owe you.
Smoke shrugged and turned back to his drink on the bar. Slaughter leaned on the bar next to him.
I've decided to hire you on, West. I have need of someone who's as good with a gun as you are.
Just where are you planning on going in Colorado?
A little town named Big Rock. There's a man there owes me $50,000, and I aim to collect every dollar of it.
Big Rock, Colorado.
Yep.
The gent owes you this money wouldn't happen to be Smoke Jensen, would it?
No, but I hear Jensen has thrown in with the man I'm going after.
Then I'm not interested.
Whitey, who was standing next to his boss, leaned towards Smoke.
You mean you're afraid of that old gunman?
You might say that. I had a run-in with Jensen a few years back. I made the mistake of drawing down on him.
Well, what of it? I see you're still alive.
Only because Jensen was so fast, he had the drop on me before I cleared leather. He didn't need to shoot me because I never got my gun out of my holster.
I can't be. I ain't never seen nobody as fast as you are, West.
Jensen is. And you don't have enough money to cause me to go up against him again a second time.
Then you're telling us you're yellow?
There's a difference between being yellow and knowing when someone's faster than you are. I feel a man ought to know his limitations if he's going to make his living with a gun.
Well, that's some yellow-bellied bullshit.
Just like you should know yours, Sonny. You say one more word, and Slaughter here is going to have to hire someone to replace you, because you're going to have an extra hole in your head.
All right, West. But what you say don't change my mind. I still aim to get my money.
Well, good luck to you, Mr. Slaughter. Because I'd advise you to take plenty of shovels with you to Colorado. Because if you go up against Smoke Jensen, you're going to have a lot of graves to dig.
Well, I guess that won't be all bad. Just means there'll be fewer men to put the money with after I put Jensen and his friends in the ground.
After supper that night, Smoke met with his friends in his room to plan their next move.
Who is it?
It's me, Muskrat Calhoun. Howdy, boys. What kind of meeting is this? I don't see no nectar around.
Lewis smiled, pulled a bottle of whiskey from the bureau drawer, and flipped it to the mountaineer. Muskrat pulled the cork.
What can we do for you, Muskrat? I thought you were headed up into the High Lonesome for your wintering.
Well, I was on my way up the mountain when I got to thinking about our little fracas the other night. I ain't had so much fun since back in 42 when Preacher and Beartooth and me blowed hell out of some Injuns down in Arizona. I plumb forgot how good it feels to put some lead in folks that sorely need it. Hell, made me feel like I was a young buck again instead of an old fart waiting around to die.
I know the feeling, Muskrat. Combat surely does get the juices flowing.
No, Smoke. It was more than that. It was that I was doing something useful again.
Well, we certainly couldn't have done it without your help, Muskrat. We never could have found our way up to the hole in the wall without your showing us the way.
Well, that's why I decided to circle around and take me another look at the hole in the wall.
What'd you see, Muskrat?
Well, the place was a mess. All of the cabins was pretty near destroyed. A couple of walls was still standing, but they ain't in no shape to keep nobody warm in the winter.
What about the outlaws?
They had a pile of bodies all stacked up over near one corner of the valley, and some of the men were digging a big hole. I guess they're going to pile them all in there together before they start to stink.
How many men were left?
I counted 10, 12 that was motivating on their own, and 4 or 5 that was laid out on the ground, blankets with bandages and such, like they was wounded pretty bad.
Slaughter had 4 men with him in town today. It looked like he managed to hire another 15 or 20.
That gives him close to 30 hard cases to take with him to Colorado when he goes after Monty.
I noticed he had one of his men hanging around the telegraph office. I guess he don't want nobody to send a wire warning Monty he's coming.
He knows at least some of the men who attacked his camp are still around.
Well, how are we going to get word to Miss Sally about his plans?
I don't think we need to worry about that. Monty knows what kind of man we're up against. He'll be ready for whatever Slaughter decides to do.
Do you think we ought to hightail it to Colorado and be waiting there for him when he shows up?
No. I think a much better plan will be to see if we can slow him down along the way.
You mean you want to do like the Comanches did when they was fighting the cavalry?
Exactly.
What do you mean?
The Comanches were badly outnumbered by the army, but they were much better horsemen and fighters. So they'd hit and run, attacking at night and other times when the army was least expecting it. They never stood their ground, but would ride in, kill a few men, ride out again, over and over. Soon, the cavalrymen couldn't get any sleep or worrying about when the next attack was coming.
We gonna wear war paint and such, too?
No, but we're gonna hit them fast and hard, and ride away to fight another day. That'll serve 2 purposes. It'll slow him down and give Monty more time to get ready for him. And, if we're lucky, we'll be able to cut their numbers down a mite before the final battle in Colorado.
Not to mention what it will do for their morale.
Exactly.
You, fellers want some company on this little jaunt?
Hey, you think you're up to it, Muskrat? We're gonna be riding fast and hard.
Hell, sonny, I've been sitting a saddle for more years than you've been walking. The day I can't outride some mangy old gun hawks is the day I lay down and die.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. Lewis and Muskrat and I will take our pack animals and equipment out of town and camp a half day's ride toward Colorado. Cal, you and Pearlie will hang around and keep an eye on Slaughter and his men. As soon as they mass up for the ride, you'll hightail it on down the road and we'll be waiting for them when they make their first camp.
Well, how will we find your campsite?
Don't you worry none, Little Beaver. You boys just head on out the eastern trail toward Colorado, and we'll see you coming.
In Big Rock, Monty and Sally Jensen were getting the town ready for whatever Slaughter had in mind. Mary had suffered no lasting ill effects from her abduction. Monty called the town meeting, and he and Sally explained that Big Jim Slaughter was most probably on the way to seek vengeance for what Monty and Smoke and the others had done to him. The town folks, after hearing the story of the stolen army payroll and how Monty had returned the money, were standing behind their popular sheriff and his wife. Not a single person in the entire town voted against helping the couple out. Monty supervised getting the town fortified and ready for the anticipated onslaught. Barricades were erected at each end of the town. Rifles were handed out, and men assigned to rooftops and high points as both lookouts and assault teams. Men were sent to station themselves miles from the town on the trails leading toward Wyoming so they could return and give ample warning of Slaughter's approach when and if it happened. Sally took charge of the women in town, helping them cook large amounts of food to have ready in case there was an extended siege. The children were put to work helping build the barricades and fences at the entrances to the town. Everybody pitched in and worked as fast as they could to make Big Rock ready for the attack. Big Jim Slaughter stood in the center of the valley at the hole in the wall with his hands on his hips and surveyed the damage. Several men were rolling bodies into a large common grave and shoveling dirt and rocks over them. Another group of men, the outlaws who planned to stay in the hole in the wall through the winter, were cutting logs and sawing limbs, working feverishly to repair the cabins destroyed in the fight.
Damn! I'd give $100 to find out who Carson found up here to help him do this.
Whitey was standing next to Slaughter.
My money's still on that gunny Johnny West.
I don't know, Whitey. It'd take a man with powerful cojones to come up here, kill half my men, and then stay in town when he'd have to know we'd come looking for whoever did this.
Man, it'd have to be a damn fool to hang around after that. And West don't look like no fool to me.
Sheriff Pike didn't have no ideas.
Sheriff Pike ain't exactly on our side in this matter, boys. While he don't bother us none as long as we stay out of his hair, that don't mean he's all that anxious to help us. He did tell me Carson and his wife got on the first train out of Jackson Hole the morning after the attack, headed east. I'm sure they're headed back to that jerkwater town where he's sheriff.
Swede glanced at the group of men standing near a fire in the center of the compound, drinking coffee and warming their hands on the flames. The weather was turning steadily colder, and snow flurries were becoming more and more common as the days passed.
You figure these extra men you hired are going to do us any good?
Some of them are, all right. Some of the others are just going to be cannon fodder.
How many men we got total now?
Close to 30, 35. A few will probably drop out along the way to Colorado. Figures to be a hard trip, what with the weather turned so fast.
Yeah, it won't be so bad on the flatlands, but getting through the passes might be tough if we get a blizzard or two.
Whitey, how about supplies? You managed to get what we needed in town?
Yes, sir. Every man has a rifle and at least one pistol. We got two wagons of foodstuffs and extra ammunition along with some dynamite and gunpowder in case we need to blast our way into that town Monte Carson lives in.
You really think we're going to have to tree Big Rock, boss? Far as I know, ain't no western town ever been taken from the outside before.
We'll do whatever it takes to get Carson and get our money, Sweet. If it means burning Big Rock to the ground, then we'll put fire to the town and flush the bastard out.
Do you think it'll come to that, Jim?
No, I doubt it. I don't figure any town's gonna let itself get burned to the ground to protect an ex-outlaw and his money. Once we let them know what's gonna happen if they don't give him up, They'll give us money faster than you can spit.
I sure hope so. I don't hanker to kill a bunch of innocent women and children just to get Carson's hide hung on a barn door.
I really don't give a damn what you hanker to do, Swede. When the time comes, you'll do what I tell you. Is that clear?
Sure, boss. I didn't mean nothing by what I said.
Slaughter shook his head and walked away toward the men by the fire.
Come on, boys. Let's go start getting the men ready to ride. We got a long way to go and we need to stay ahead of the weather.
On the ridge overlooking the hole in the wall, Pearly lay on his stomach behind a large blueberry bush and peered at the activity through binoculars. Cal lay next to him, watching over his shoulder.
What are they doing, Pearly?
Just standing there jawing, it looks like.
I see a couple wagons over there to the side.
Mm-hmm. Appears they're full of guns and food and stuff like that.
So they are getting ready to head to Colorado, just like Smoke said.
Yep, looks like Smoke had Slaughter figured right. He's planning on going after Monty and his money, all right.
You reckon we should head back to Jackson Hole or stay out here and see what they do?
It don't look to me like they're going to be going back to Jackson at all. They already got all their supplies, so I guess we ought to plan on camping up here in the woods so we know when they take off.
Cal stepped back from the ledge to where he couldn't be seen from below and glanced at the sky.
Looks like snow in them clouds. It's going to get mighty chilly up here come nightfall, Pearly.
Yeah, we won't be able to make no fire neither, or else they'll see it.
I guess that means you're going to miss a meal, Pearly. You think your stomach can take going 24 hours without being stuffed plumb full?
What makes you say that? Before we left Jackson Hole, I had Aunt Bee fixes up a mess of fried chicken, some sinkers, and I bought a couple cans of sliced peaches. It may freeze our butts off, cowboy. Well, sure as hell ain't gonna go hungry.
Now, I should have known you had some food stashed somewheres, or else you'd never left Jackson Hole.
Like Smoke always says, Cal, you gotta learn to plan ahead, or else you get caught with your pants down.
What was that?
Sounds like we got company coming.
Just then, four men walked out of the brush, axes and saws over their shoulders. Evidently, they were part of the crew of men cutting timber to repair the cabins down below.
What the hell?
The six men stared at each other for a moment, all of them too surprised to move at first.
Take it easy, boys. We're just a couple of miners up here looking for gold.
You're the man who shot us up the other night.
Pearly crouched and filled his hands with iron, while Cal took one step to the side to give the men less of a target to shoot at, and he drew his Colt Navy 36 caliber pistol. Pearly and Cal's bullets took two of the men in the chest and blew them backward into the other two, knocking them all to the ground. Pearly's shot hit one of the men on the ground in the forehead. Cal's second shot took the fourth man in the shoulder just as he fired. The force of the blow threw the outlaw's aim off, and his bullet tore into Cal's left thigh. As the man eased back his hammer for another shot, Pearly raised his pistol. Pearly rushed to Cal's side and leaned over him.
Cal, you all right, boy?
Hey.
Cal pulled his leg up and looked at where the bullet had torn a hole in his pants and burned a shallow groove along the outside of his thigh.
Yeah, I guess so. You just winged me.
I should have knowed it. It's been over a month since you got shot the last time. You were past due, boy.
It was just a lucky shot.
Pearly stepped behind him and put his hands under his arms, lifting him to his feet.
Nevertheless, we gotta get going. Them gunshots gonna bring Slaughter and his men up here like bees buzzing around a nest with a stick poked in it.
Cal took off his bandana and tied it in a knot to slow the bleeding.
You go get our horses and I'll be in there in a minute.
When Pearly brought their mounts, Cal walked around and got on from the right side, with the left leg unable to pull him into the saddle now.
Come on, Cal. Gotta make tracks around the mountain to the other side where we can find some cover. They're gonna be searching for us for long.
Cal nodded, leaning over his saddle horn and holding on for dear life, trying his best to stay in the saddle. He knew that if he passed out, he was as good as dead.
What the hell?
In the valley below, Slaughter jerked around at the sound of gunshots on the ridge above him, his hand automatically going for his pistol. He realized they were not the ones under attack.
Whitey, get some horses saddled and get some men up on that ridge. Find out what the hell's going on.
Whitey motioned to several men by the fire to follow him as he ran toward the corral.
God damn! It's probably the same men who were here the other night.
Maybe we should have kept the sentries doubled up, boss, instead of cutting back to one man at each station.
Slaughter glared at him, knowing Swede was right, but resenting the implication that he himself had made a mistake.
You know we were short a man after the attack, Swede.
That's right, boss, and who would have figured they would have hit again so soon?
Mollified a bit by Swede's statement, Slaughter turned and watched as Whitey and five men rode up the narrow trail leading to the ridge where the shots were heard. In less than 30 minutes, Whitey came back down the trail, alone. He rode over to Slaughter and got down off his horse.
What happened up there?
Four of the men cutting timber for the cabins were shot and killed. From the tracks, it looks like two men were lying up there watching us and were surprised by the other four.
4-2 and all four of our men were killed?
Yes, sir, but it looks like they managed to put lead in one of them because there's blood on the ground where all the tracks were.
Blood but no body?
I got the boys trying to track them down now. With any luck, they'll find them and kill them.
Huh. If I had any luck, they'd already be dead. I don't want those men back in camp until they find and kill these bastards. It's probably part of the same bunch who attacked us the other night.
Yeah, it's the same place they fired from before. What I'm wondering is, how'd they get up there without our sentries knowing about it?
There must be a back way up there that don't go by our sentry posts. That's the only way I can figure it.
And what are we going to do about it?
Nothing. It won't matter after tomorrow, because we'll be on our way to Colorado.
Halfway down the back side of the mountain, on the opposite side from the hole in the wall, Pearly found a cave hidden among a group of granite boulders. He dismounted and pulled his pistol, warily walking to the cave's entrance.
Woo! Smells like a bear crawled in here and died.
Careful, Pearly. Now's the time of year for bears and such to hibernate. Liable to be a big grizzly in there just sitting down for winter.
If in there is, gonna get awful crowded in here. And we gotta find a hole to crawl in before those banditos come after us.
When he disappeared into the black hole of the entrance, Cal shucked his Winchester rifle from its saddle boot and cradled it in his arms, ready to fire if Pearly came running out of the cave with a bear on his trail. After a few moments, Pearly reemerged.
Nothing in there but some old bones. Looks like a bear had his dinner in there and decided it wasn't time for the long sleep just yet.
Cal rebooted his rifle and climbed painfully down from his saddle.
Come on, see if we can get these mounts to go in there.
When they smelled the acrid bear scent, both horses reared back and fought their reins, wanting no part of a dark place that smelled of a carnivore as large as a grizzly. After some coaching and lots of heavy pulling, the boys finally managed to get the horses into the cave and back to where it opened up at the rear. There was a hat-sized opening in the rocks above that let a little sunlight and some welcome fresh air into the cabin. So the horses calmed down a little, helped by some handfuls of grain handed out by Cal.
You try and get the bronc settled down, I'll go sweep our tracks and put some deadfall around the entrance. But in luck, the outlaws won't find us.
And if our luck don't hold and they do,
then we'll blast hell at them and take as many with us as we can.
While Cal was trying to get the horses completely calmed down, Pearly took a pine limb and used it like a broom to sweep away all tracks leading to their hiding place. After he was finished, he moved piles of fallen branches and limbs to the front of the cave, hiding the entrance from sight. In less than an hour, the two men could hear sounds of horses and men outside the cave. Cal stayed in the rear, his hands on the noses of their mounts to try and keep them from whinnying or making any other sounds, while Pearly took his rifle and lay on his belly just inside the entrance, peering through branches at the outside. Five outlaws rode down the narrow trail through the piney woods, rifles and shotguns cradled in their arms.
I just hope we catch them alive so we can string them up over a fire and roast their asses off.
I don't care if we get them alive, just so's we get them.
Slaughter'd have our butts if we come back without them bastards.
Well, I ain't seen no sign or tracks or nothing for the last hour. It sure looks like we gonna get a blizzard for long. I vote we head on back before we get trapped up here and freeze our bulk off.
Yeah, if those men are up here, they're gonna die in the blizzard without no cover to get to. We can tell Slaughter there just ain't no way they could survive out here when the snows come.
The group of searchers jerked their mounts' heads around and headed back the way they'd come. Pearly walked back to the rear of the cave,
Good work keeping them animals quiet, Cal. Think they're giving up on finding us.
Then we can get out of here and head back to town?
Nope. Looks like there's a hell of a storm brewing out there. Wouldn't do for us to get caught in it halfway to town. We still gotta keep an eye on these bastards till they leave so we can warn Smoke.
I don't know if I can stand to spend the night in here, Pearly. I can't hardly breathe and this bear stink is so strong.
Pearly shrugged as he walked to his saddlebags and took out a bag of fried chicken and biscuits and canned peaches. Pearly opened the bag of chicken and pitched a leg to Cal.
Here, I know you likes the legs the best.
You got enough sinkers for both of us?
I don't know. There might be one or two I can spare.
Big Jim Slaughter was furious when the search party returned and reported they'd caught no sight of whoever killed the four men on the ridge.
God damn it! There ain't no place to hide up there on the mountain. How could you not find any sign of them?
Billy Bob Justice, the man in charge of the search, hung his head, not wanting to look at Slaughter.
I don't know, boss. They just seem to disappear. One minute they's tracks as plain as day leading around the mountain, and the next they was gone without no trace.
And you say it looked like there was only two of them?
We only found tracks of two horses.
What about the blood trail?
It went for about 100 yards, then it petered out too. We figured they's gonna freeze to death if they stay up there on the mountain with this blizzard that's coming.
Damn! Surrounded by fools.
Slaughter walked toward the fire. He stood there a moment, warming his hands and thinking. After a moment, he looked up at the sky as large, wet snowflakes began to fall.
All right. Guess it can't be helped.
He turned to Whitey, who was standing next to him.
Whitey, get the men ready and pack up our gear. I want to leave it first light if this damn storm is over by then.
Yes, sir.
We need to get moving before these men have a chance to get back to Jackson Hole and get reinforcements to come attack us again. Right now, we're easy targets down here since our sentries don't seem to be able to stop them.
Yes, sir. I'll get the men ready.
I just wish I knew who it was that's dogging us.
Well, once we get on the trail, I'll have men watching our back trail to make sure they don't follow us and surprise us along the way.
That's a good idea, Whitey. At least someone around here is thinking besides me. Sweet. It might even be a good idea to leave a few men behind to set up an ambush. Catch those bastards with their pants down if they try to trail us.
Swede nodded, his face grim.
Swede, pick five men you think are pretty good with their guns. After we get 5 or 6 miles down the trail toward Colorado, you look for a likely spot for an ambush and get those men set up. We'll teach those sons of bitches not to mess with Big Jim Slaughter.
Unable to start a fire, Pearly and Cal spent the night in the cave bundled in their ground blankets, and even covered themselves with brush and pine needles to try to keep from freezing. Luckily, the space was small enough that the warmth given off by the two horses helped keep the temperatures bearable. When he awoke just after dawn, Cal felt as if his leg was on fire. He pulled the blanket off and was alarmed to find his thigh swollen to almost twice its normal size. Ugh. Pearly rolled over and glanced at Cal, sitting upright and staring at his leg.
What's going on, partner?
Cal quickly covered his limb.
Nothing. Just trying to wake up.
Pearly climbed stiffly out of his blankets and walked to the cave entrance. Snow had drifted to a depth of 3 feet. And it almost covered the hole in the rock. Pearly kicked and dug his way out into the bright sunshine. He was grateful for the warmth of the sun, even though the temperature was still below freezing. He clambered back into the cave.
Damn, the weather's clearing. Kinda hoped the storm would stay around for a while to give us some cover.
Pearly fished around in his saddlebags and pulled out a couple of biscuits and one piece of fried chicken left over from the night before. Turning to Cal, he held him up.
Looks like we gotta share one lonely piece of chicken and two sinkers.
Cal tried to get to his feet, but his leg collapsed beneath him, and he fell to the ground, his face furrowed with pain. Pearly rushed to his side.
What's the matter, Cal?
Oh, it's my leg, Pearly. It hurts something fierce, and it's kind of swollen.
Pearly, noticing the flushed appearance of Cal's face, put his hand on his friend's cheek.
Oh, damn, boy, you're burning up with fever.
Pearly pulled the blanket down.
Get those pants down. Let me take a look at that wound, Cal.
Cal unbuckled his belt and struggled to get his trousers down over the swollen leg.
Damn.
The thigh was bright red, swollen, and there was pus flowing from the fur of the bullet that dug in Cal's flesh.
Boy, you done got suppuration in that bullet wound.
I see he'll be all right, Pearly. Just help me to get up on my horse so we can see what the outlaws are doing.
I'll get you up on your horse, Cal. We ain't gonna bother with no outlaws this morning. We gotta get you back to Jackson Hole so the doc can fix that thing.
We can't, Pearly. We gotta keep an eye on them so we can warn Smoke when they leave.
If then we don't get you some doctoring, you're gonna end up losing that leg.
Cal's head lolled back, and he almost fainted from the pain when his trousers moved against his swollen flesh. Pearly quickly moved to their horses and began to lead them from the cave.
I'll get the horses saddled, and then I'll come back for you. You stay still now, you hear?